So it is Friday, April 19th, 2024. I'm Charlie Shine, and reading the front pages of the Hartford Courant and the New York Times with me today is Bill Murphy. We're going to start by taking a look at the pictures in the front page of the New York Times, and then we're going to go over to Bill and get a look at the pictures in the front page of the Courant and get our first story. So taking a look at the New York Times, we see police on campus. Columbia called in law enforcement yesterday to empty an encampment of pro-Palestinian protesters. And we've got the picture from the campus. We got tents set up, people milling about right on the campus center and right in front of the, looks like, I think that's a library building. I'm not entirely certain. Anyways, we move on down. Right below the fold, we have a woman and her child planting trees in Bogor, Indonesia. Some activists say environmentalism is embedded in the Quran, and we're going to have a closer look at that story in a little bit. By the way, we're also going to be taking a look at the protesters on campus and what that means. A U.S. senator is seeking to ban Chinese electric vehicles. The story, China threatens Biden makeover of the U.S. industry, and the photo is a little bigger than a thumbnail of electric vehicles all piled up. Looks like they're ready for shipment. Then that brings us down to the some thumbnail photos in the bottom of the page. We're going to be taking a look at this in our first story in the international section. Deadly rains lash two neighbors. More than 130 people have died in flash flooding and severe weather in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And the photo itself is of some folks in, looks like a canoe of some kind in the middle of a field. As we move on over to the right, "Goodbye Grand Canyon State" is the caption. The Coyotes' 28-year tenure in Arizona has ended. The NHL franchise is off to Salt Lake City, and a picture is two folks sitting in an empty stadium. And then from the Weekend Arts section, a photo from there, "Boundary Breaking Tapestries." MoMA PS1 is hosting an exhibition of the works of the Navajo weaver Melissa Cody. Above, there's a photo picture of visitors are viewing into the depths she repels. And that's the tapestry that the two folks are looking at, which is, it's hard to tell exactly what we're looking at because, again, it is a thumbnail photo. All right, that's it for the pictures in the front page of the New York Times. And now we're going to take a look at pictures in the front page of the Courant. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Charlie. I may need your help in pronouncing this thing here. I'm going to try it when I get to it. Okay. It's in the caption. It's the circus that I guess is now in Hartford. Is Cirque du Soleil or something like that?
Cirque du Soleil.
Okay, I knew I needed your help with that. All right. The picture is that of an artist. His name is Corey Payne, and he is saying a few words during an unveiling of his new mural on Wednesday at 306 Market Street in Hartford. It says the mural is a project collaborated between Rise Up for Arts and what is that again, Charlie? Cirque du Soleil.
Cirque du Soleil.
Cirque du Soleil. And then I'm going to tell you what the other picture is, and I'll try to describe them as best I can. Students from the Community First School in Hartford pose for a photo, and they are performers during the unveiling of the mural. And he is standing there, the gentleman, Corey Payne, speaking into a microphone, and behind him are the students, are, I guess, performers, and they're very colorful attire. There's about eight or nine of them standing. Now, I cannot tell you what the mural is. It's a picture of a person with a hat on. I don't know.
It's a person that's wearing some sort of a hat. There are some folks standing in front of the mural. The mural itself is an orange background, and not quite sure who the gentleman is. All right, anyway, we'll turn that back to Bill.
Charlie does a much better job describing than I do, so that's why I gave it to him. All right, we're going to go into the first story. It's from the World and Nation section of The Courant from Philadelphia. President Joe Biden scooped up endorsements from at least 15 members of the Kennedy political family during a campaign stop Thursday as he aims to undermine former President Donald Trump and marginalize the candidacy of independent Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Kerry Kennedy, a daughter of former Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy, niece of former President John F. Kennedy, and sister of the current presidential candidate, delivered the endorsements in Philadelphia by calling Biden, quote, my hero, unquote. She goes on to say, we want to make a crystal clear announcement that our feeling is that the best way forward for America is to reelect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris for four more years. She never directly mentioned her brother, but insisted there are only two candidates with any chance of winning the presidency this year, framing the campaign as a choice between Biden and Trump, with no room for a third-party contender. Biden, who keeps a bust of Robert F. Kennedy in the Oval Office, said the endorsements were, and this is a quote from the president, an incredible honor. He said Trump, the former president who was the presumptive Republican nominee, was a threat to America's democratic traditions and that now it's time to keep going and not slow down because there's so much at stake. The decision to highlight the Kennedy family support more than 6 months from Election Day is an indication of how seriously Biden's team is taking a long-shot candidate using his last name's lingering Democratic magic to siphon support from the incumbent. Kennedy Jr. played down the endorsements, writing on social media that his family was, quote, divided in our opinions, but united in our love for each other. And he said his campaign was about healing America. That was a quote. Given Kennedy Jr.'s quixotic political positions and the expectation this year's campaign will be decided by thin margins, both Democrats and Republicans worry that he could play the role of spoiler. Back to you, Charlie.
Deadly rains pound Afghanistan and Pakistan well ahead of monsoons. A deluge of unseasonably heavy rains has lashed Pakistan and Afghanistan in recent days, killing more than 130 people across both countries, with the authorities forecasting more flooding and rainfall and some experts pointing to climate change as the cause. In Afghanistan, at least 70 people have been killed in flash floods and other weather-related incidents, while more than 2,600 homes have been destroyed or damaged, according to Mullah Janan Sayo, a spokesman for the Ministry of Disaster Management. At least 62 people have died in the storms in neighboring Pakistan, which has been hammered by rainfall, at least twice the average rain for rate for this time this year, according to Pakistani officials. Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province, the Pakistani region bordering Afghanistan, appears to be the hardest hit. Flash floods and landslides caused by torrential rains have damaged homes and destroyed infrastructure. Photos and videos from the province show roads turned into raging rivers and homes and bridges being swept away. The rains have caused significant damage, said Billy Fazi, spokesperson for the Provincial Disaster Management Authority, said in a phone interview. He added that at least 33 people had died in the province over the past 4 days and 336 houses had been destroyed. Around midnight on Monday in Swat Valley in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province, Akbarzada woke up to a thunderous crash after a boulder tumbled down a nearby mountain in the rain and destroyed a room of his home where two of his sons were sleeping. The boys, 14 and 16, were both killed. The rain has been relentless these years, and now it's taken my sons, Mr. Zada said in a phone interview. The deluge in Afghanistan and Pakistan began at the same time the rainstorms swept the Gulf, battering the United Arab Emirates and Oman with a record-setting rainfall that killed at least 20 people in both countries. The storms in the United Arab Emirates constituted the largest rainfall event in the region in 75 years. In Pakistan, The recent flooding comes just over 2 years after a devastating monsoon season battered the country in 2022, killing over 1,700 people and affecting about 33 million more. That flooding destroyed millions of acres of crops, caused billions of dollars worth of damage, and started an international conversation about the environmental costs of global warming that poorer countries disproportionately shoulder. Bill.
Thank you, Charlie. Another story from the World and Nation section of The Current. This is from Washington. House congressional leaders were toiling Thursday on a delicate bipartisan push toward weekend votes to approve a $95 billion package of foreign aid for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, as well as several other national security policies at a critical moment at home and abroad. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson this week set in motion a plan to advance the package, which has been held up since October by GOP lawmakers resistant to approving more funding for Ukraine's fight against Russia. As the Republican Speaker faced a rebellion from his right flank and growing threats for his ouster, it became clear that House Democrat Leader Hakeem Jeffries would have to lead and lend a help to Johnson every step of the way. This is a very important message we are going to send to the world this week, and I'm anxious to get it done, Johnson said Wednesday, announcing his strategy. The growing momentum for a bipartisanship dynamic, a rarity in the deeply divided Congress, brought rare scenes of Republicans and Democrats working together to assert U.S. standing on the global stage and help American allies. But it also sent Johnson's House Republican majority into fresh rounds of chaos, Johnson's Republican leadership team seizing on the opportunity to outflank hardline conservatives with Democratic support, raised the idea of quickly changing the procedural rules to make it harder to oust the speaker from office. But ultra-conservatives reacted with fury, angrily confronting Johnson on the House floor in a tense scene Thursday morning. Several suggested they would join the effort to oust Johnson if the rule was changed. By the afternoon, Johnson backed away from the idea. "We will continue to govern under the existing rules," the speaker said on the social platform X, formerly Twitter. Meanwhile, a rare image of bipartisan statesmanship was on display as the Procedural Rules Committee began debate, launching the steps needed to push the foreign aid package forward toward weekend voting. The Republican chairman of the powerful Appropriations and Foreign Affairs Committees, alongside their top Democratic counterparts, spoke in evocative language, some drawing on World War II history, to make the case for ensuring the U.S. stand with its allies against aggressors. Charlie?
Prince Harry, officially a U.S. resident, filing says. From London, the document filed on Wednesday at Britain's corporate registrar Companies House was just a few lines long, but its purpose was to formally update the country of residency for one, quote, Prince Harry Charles Albert David Duke of Sussex, otherwise known as Prince Harry. For years, Harry and his American wife, Meghan, have considered California home. The document updated the residency of the British royal to the United States for official paperwork for his business, Travelist Limited, a nonprofit sustainable travel initiative. The paperwork was just a bureaucratic formality, but it underscores just how far Harry, 39, has come from his days as a central member of the royal family to the country of his birth to a very different life with his wife and children in California. It also comes at a time of turmoil for the House of Windsor. Harry and Meghan moved to Montecito, California, after stepping back from royal duties in 2020 amid a rift with the royal family. Prince Harry said in February that he had considered becoming a U.S. citizen, telling ABC's Good Morning America, "It's a thought that's crossed my mind, but it's not a high priority for me right now." But there had been little in the way of official confirmation of Harry's residency status until this week. The filing indicates the change in residency dates back to June 29, 2023, the day that Buckingham Palace confirmed the couple had vacated Frogmore Cottage, their British home. Queen Elizabeth II had offered the home to the couple when they were married in 2018. It's unclear what type of U.S. visa or residency permit Harry holds, despite efforts by conservative activists in the United States to ascertain them, including a current lawsuit. He could be eligible for a green card through his marriage to Meghan, a U.S. citizen. Immigration lawyers have pointed out that he could also be entitled to A-1 diplomatic visa available to members of a reigning royal family. The Heritage Foundation, a conservative research institute, launched a lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security in June 2023 to see documents related to Harry's visa, saying the group had a right to see them as part of research data into whether his application for residency should have been rejected because of past drug use. Harry, the fifth in line of succession to the British throne, wrote in Spare, his 2023 memoir, that he had used cocaine and other drugs in the past. Last month, former President Donald J. Trump told the right-wing British broadcaster GB News that he would take, quote, appropriate action, unquote, if Harry were to have found to have lied on a visa application. The Heritage Foundation had sought the documents specifically to investigate how the prince had been admitted, since some visas require applicants to answer questions about past drug use and legal violations. The Department of Homeland Security declined to make those documents public when they were requested last year, stating that there had been no public interest in disclosure sufficient to override the subject's privacy interests. Bill.
Thank you, Charlie. And one more story from the World and Nation section of The Current, again from Washington. The U.S. and U.K. on Thursday imposed a new round of sanctions on Iran as concern grows that Tehran's unprecedented attack on Israel could fuel a wider war in the Middle East. The sanctions are meant to hold Iran accountable for its weekend attack and to deter further such activity. But the practical impact is likely to be limited because many of the targeted companies already were subject to U.S. sanctions, and the individuals singled out for new sanctions are unlikely to have assets in U.S. jurisdictions. Treasury Office of Foreign Assets Control targeted 16 people and two entities in Iran that produce engines that power the drones used in the April 13th attack on Israel. OFAC also sanctioned 5 firms involved in steel production and 3 subsidiaries of Iranian automaker Bahman Group, which is accused of materially supporting Iran's military and other sanctioned groups. A representative from Bahman was not immediately available for comment. Additionally, the UK targeted several Iranian military branches and individuals involved in Iran's drone and ballistic missile industries. President Joe Biden said in a statement that he had directed the U.S. Treasury, this is a quote, to continue to impose sanctions that further degrade Iran's military industries, unquote. He does go on to say, let it be clear, all those who enable or support Iran's attacks, we will not hesitate to take all necessary action to hold you accountable. UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said in a statement that the sanctions will further limit Iran's ability to destabilize the region. In addition, the U.S. Commerce Department is imposing new controls to restrict Iran's access to commercial-grade microelectronics, which applies to items manufactured outside the U.S. that are produced using U.S. technology. The actions come after U.S. officials earlier this week warned that they were readying new sanctions in response to Iran's activity in the region and to prevent future attacks. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill also have been quickly pushing forward legislation that would financially punish the Islamic Republic and its leaders.